taking the right transformational path to your destiny? Welcome to Dream the Life, Live the Dream with your host, Dr. Yomi Garnett. You can find growth, personal strength, and discovery no matter where you are in life right now. Truly enlightened people follow a regimented course, and you can too, starting now. Here is Dr. Yomi Garnett.
Hello there, and welcome to today's episode of Dream the Life, Live the Dream. Permit me to wish you a gloriously and prosperously Happy New Year. I am sure that you had a wonderful Yuletide holiday season, just as I did. Now, this year promises to be a most exciting one, and we are taking off on a most exciting note. My distinguished special guest today is a seasoned media guru and one of America's most accomplished television news anchors. And I will be engaging her in an hour-long discussion on her fascinating career as a media personality. Donna Britt, welcome to Dream the Life, Live the Dream.
Thank you very much, Dr. Garnett.
Thank you so
much. By the way, because you have a national show, there is another who is named Donna Britt, who is African-American columnist and for the Washington Post. So I want to let everyone know that I am Donna Britt of Baton Rouge.
Oh, splendid. In any case, Donna, in the next 1 minute, I'll be introducing you comprehensively, and everyone will know you are Donna Britt of Baton Rouge. Now, Donna is a television news anchor with WAFB Baton Rouge. She is co-anchor of WAFB top-rated 6 p.m. and 10 p.m. news broadcasts. Now, Donna is one of those rare birds in American local television news. She belongs to the class of personality that I have come to typify as the media greats. Her life is a classic study in variety. She has been a news anchor at WAFB for 33 years. WAFB is the CBS affiliate in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Now, in those 3 decades, she has covered every type of news you could possibly conceive. She has even indulged in a little sports without being an expert. Donna has once hungrily toured the locker rooms of the Baltimore Orioles looking for a story. Now, as a breast cancer survivor, which she is, Donna has become a local poster child for all cancers, and she also helps with fundraisers. She is a former stand-up musician. However, hardly anyone remembers this about her. Now, a rather painful episode was responsible for Donna's relocation to Baton Rouge, and it is this story that provides the background for her resort to Plan B. You will recall, if you follow the social media bleeds for today's show, that the topic for today's show is why Plan B may be your best choice. I take that again. Today's topic is why Plan B may be your best choice. Now, this is a short synopsis about what today's show is all about. Now, please note that an interesting thing about life is that the path we map out for ourselves may not necessarily be the one that fate has designed for us. In real terms, self-effort and predestination may well be two wheels of the same cart. However, it is always wise to factor in not only our primordial inclinations as seen in our talents and gifts, but also the magnificent weavings of the universe in its attempt to steer us along the path that will bring out the very best in our latent abilities. It is usually at that stage that we discover, usually to our astonished delight, that we possess undiscovered talents that actually consume every part of our personality. Now, today's show with Donna Britt presents perfect example of such a life phenomenon. Donna, welcome again to Dream the Life, Live the Dream.
Thank you.
Good. Now, Donna, hardly anyone remembers that you have a prior and significant history in music. Tell us this story about Donna the musician.
All right. I was born to a preacher and his wife, and my mother had been very poor. And she did not find out until she was in college that she had natural, innate musical ability. She had what is called absolute pitch. I think in classical circles, musicians don't like to say there's such a thing as perfect pitch. But absolute pitch is when you recognize notes without any kind of reference, and you know them very well. And she discovered that I had absolute pitch when I was about five. And my mom was very bent on me having every opportunity that she had not had. And so she had learned to play piano only in college, so she started me on piano. And she was very, very strict. She would put five buttons on the piano, and I have to play the piece for my practicing perfectly through to move a button over, and I couldn't move to the next piece until I had moved all five. And so if I missed one, I would have to play it over again. And this kind of heavy outside discipline on me sort of did not make me create it for myself. I had my mother superimposed the discipline. And so when my mother died when I was nine, I sort of rebelled and played by ear for years. I was my father's piano player at churches where he preached. In fact, my whole childhood, I only saw the service from the side of the preacher, not from the front, because I was always sitting in the piano well. Anyway, when I was in about eighth grade, my father marched me in to the band director and said, "Give her the hardest instrument you have." And they handed us an oboe. And oboe is what I played in high school and college. In fact, I became so good on oboe that I got a scholarship and used that scholarship for my years in college. And it was in college that I was taking private lessons from a teacher who I did not know at the time when I signed up to go there was an alcoholic. And what happened, Dr. Yomi, at this point is that he was drunk on the job a lot. You could smell the alcohol, but he was what I would call a functioning alcoholic, in that he could be drunk and still walk around and look pretty much like he is not. But he started sexually harassing me and saying that, "Oh, you can't possibly play the climaxes of music with the passion that you have, you know, if you have not had sex with me." And I would laugh, you know, and I would try and laugh it off because I had led a pretty sheltered life, and I knew that as an authority figure, I wasn't expecting anything like that from him. And it got more and more aggressive. In other words, he would, when you are in private lessons, you sit close to each other and share the music stand, and he would press his leg against my leg, and I would inch away, and I would play, and there was sort of cat and mouse for a while, and I was really not sure of what I was seeing. But then he started trying to slip his hand up my shorts. You know, in the South, it's warm, so you wear shorts to school. And one day, eventually, he tried to pin me against the wall and started unbuttoning my shirt, and I screamed. And someone in the hallway pushed open the door, and I ran out. Well, I reported all of this molestation to the dean of the school, who said he would get on it and then did nothing. And I had problems because I had this teacher that I couldn't deal with, and he was on my major instrument. And so I started looking around for another school to move to, and a very good friend of mine had heard of the oboe teacher at LSU in Baton Rouge, how outstanding he was. And so I actually auditioned for him and moved. Before I left USM in Hattiesburg, I talked to the president of the university, and I told him how I had gone to the dean of the department and nothing had been done and what had happened. And he listened very intently, and he said, "Well, if I need you to come back and testify, if we hold hearings on this, would you be willing to?" And I gave him all my information. And you know, he didn't need me to testify, because once they announced that this professor was in a hearing, women, young women came out of the woodwork who had also been molested by him. And so he ended up losing his job, and I ended up in Baton Rouge. By the way, he rehabbed and got other work. I don't want to say that his life ended, you know, badly in that way. But I landed in Baton Rouge. I determined that I was going to not accompany all my friends on piano. I was going to focus, and I learned all the instruments because I wanted to be a symphony conductor. But I was also flag choreographer of the band. And as one of seven children in my family, four of us were in college at the same time, and my parents were having trouble paying for all of our tuition. And so I went to a vo-tech school and took a class in radio broadcasting because band occupied 6 days a week, and I had one day that I could work. And I worked in radio, and the second week I was on the air on the major number one country station in Baton Rouge, the news director at Channel 9 called and said, there is a young thing on the competition, and I'm looking for someone more mature that can draw viewers. And I was on the phone, and I paused for a minute, and I said, how old do you think I am? And the news director said, oh, wow, I just walked into a trap with a woman, didn't I? And I said, well, let's put it this way. I'm still in college, and I just started work at this radio station, and I don't do that. I don't start work and leave immediately. And he said, well, you're ethical, so now I really want to talk to you. And so I did go talk to him, and he said that I had everything it took to be a top-flight anchor woman. He interviewed me for 2.5 hours, and then I went into the studio and read wire copy for a camera, which at the radio station I'd been working at, DJs were ripping and reading. We didn't yet have news departments in radio stations in medium markets back then. And so it was easy what I did. And when I came out, he said, you have a curious mind. You're articulate. You're self-starting. He said, if you want to learn from the bottom, I could teach you, and you would be a top-flight anchor woman. And I said, well, let me graduate first. And so he waited 6 months until I graduated. And then I started on the weekends while working full-time at WYNK, was the name of the radio station. And after 6 months of working 7 days a week, I said yes to TV. And I left radio and moved over to WAFB. And this was a week after I graduated LSU. And I just I just found that TV plugged into more parts of me. Well, first when I started working at Channel 9, I thought that I would work, save money, and get a grad degree in conducting. And I just never went back to it.
Donna?
Yes.
Your story is most fascinating. I'd just like to touch on something. The topic of today's show is why Plan B may be your best choice. Can you relate your experience within the context of this rather poignant title? Would you say you had a Plan B in mind as at the time you entered Louisiana State University?
Well, see, for me, Plan A, my entire life, I was tracked to be a concert pianist or a conductor, something in music. My parents dreamed of me writing beautiful music for the Baptist Church, you know, and they knew. See, in high school, I was writing pieces for band, transposing all the parts, conducting and making superior pluses at competitions. And I did not have a peer in high school. And so going to college, everyone felt that I would just be a musician. And that's the way I viewed myself. But when I was grabbed by the lapels by television and asked to come try it, I discovered that the person that I was more gregarious and people-oriented than I had been even in music. I mean, in music, you're a close-knit group. You have your orchestra. You have your compadres, but you're in a practice room 4 hours a day to 6 hours a day by yourself. In news, I had a constant stream of new faces, new subjects. The eclectic side of my scattered nature seemed to fit perfectly into what news was.
Well, what you are saying, if I was to transpose this into other words, is that your personality found its full and absolute expression in newscasting. Is this true?
Yeah, I think the news director saw that. I never would have pictured it. I never would have looked at a TV and said, I need to be on TV. But I had been in speech competitions in high school and had won. I had always been an avid student of biology and many subjects, not just music. It wasn't like I was a singularly focused person. And my dad was worried about that. He would constantly say, a jack of all trades is master at none. You need to focus. You need to focus. And I admit, I'm probably ADD. But the focus in its intensity for me was on new subjects and new things and learning things. And news tends to be that kind of experience.
So what you are saying is that in your world, in the world of newscasting and news anchorage, the form of focus that we need in other fields of human endeavor is not an absolute, because you are dealing with so many new faces every day and so many news items every day. So if you have a personality that lends itself to a scattered nature, then you fit perfectly well into the world of newscasting and broadcasting. Is this what you are saying?
It was as natural as breathing for me. It was really, I feel like, what my vocation was, despite all my plans to be a musician. See, at the time, there were women conductors who were making headway. Sarah Caldwell was the first woman conductor of the Metropolitan Opera's orchestra. Marin Alsop in Baltimore was the first woman to conduct Baltimore's symphony. It was like there were women already blazing trails for me to be a conductor. And I really thought that that was what it would be, because when I could hear errors, you know, people playing wrong notes, I knew exactly what they were and could tell them, transpose it in my head and tell them, you know, that's an E-flat, you know. But it was not really the thing that made me happiest. And so I feel like that a person needs to be open to reason and to opportunity. And when
Donna,
I talk to young people, I talk about that.
Okay, we'll have to take a break now. And when we come back, after a couple of minutes, I'd like you to continue along this thread. It's really fascinating and interesting. So we'll just take a small commercial break now.
On Facebook, along with some of the greatest minds of the world, and that includes you. Visit us on Facebook at Voice America Empowerment.
If this show has availed you of tremendous insight into how to live at your highest potential, you can get even more of Dr. Garnett's messages from our website, www.theglobalinstituteinc.com, where his blog, in particular, can be a catalyst for great change in your life. The Global Institute has great material for you to make the changes you need. The book, 365 Days of Wisdom, a daily companion for the soul in search of enlightenment, is available on Amazon.com. It's a 3-in-1 self-help package. Dr. Garnett's latest book is also available. It's titled The Bishop's Testament, and it's available at StonebridgePublications.com. You can also become a member of the Global Institute for Human Excellence by simply visiting our Facebook community page and liking it at www.facebook.com/The Global Institute Inc. This will allow you access to our free resource just for today and some other products lined up for the future. You will also be issued a membership certificate. Get started on your transformation today.
Want more positivity in your life? Are you ready to get healthy, happy, and energized? Join the Stella Donna Goddess Gals, Cynthia Bryan and Heather Brittany, for a power hour of stimulating, supportive conversation on Star Style, Be the Star You Are. A lineup of best-selling authors, celebrities, and experts join the effervescent mother-daughter dynamic duo in this upbeat, positive, life-changing talk radio playground. Star Style, Be the Star You Are, Wednesdays, 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Lend us your ears. It's power time.
Friend us on Facebook to keep up with what's empowering the world. Voice America Empowerment.
You are listening to Dream the Life, Live the Dream with Dr. Yomi Garnett. To reach our show today, please call 1-888-346-9141. That's toll-free in North America at 1-888-346-9141. If you prefer to send an email to Dr. Garnett, you may send it to yomigarnett@gmail.com. That's yomigarnett@gmail.com. Now, back to Dream the Life, Live the Dream.
Welcome to the second episode, the second segment, pardon me, of today's episode. Let me remind you that we are with Donna Braid. Donna Braid is co-anchor of the WAFB top-rated 6 p.m. and 10 p.m. news broadcast, WAFB Baton Rouge, state of Louisiana. And we've been having a great time with her. Donna, welcome back to the second segment of today's episode.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
Good, great. Now, you have been a news author at news anchor at WAFB, the CBS affiliate in Baton Rouge, for 33 years. And in that time, it's quite obvious that you have covered every type of news you can imagine. Mm-hmm. Now, can you tell us a little bit about this great and scintillating career?
Well, I have traveled many subjects because I had arts training. They initially, and I also had a music education degree. They initially put me on a desegregation case of Baton Rouge schools. And so I was the lead story every night, even though I had never had training. I was a good writer always, and so I basically learned how to write while writing the lead story a lot. I covered disasters, chemical disasters and natural disasters. I covered crime. I was the legislative reporter at the Capitol for a few years. And I just kind of migrated around to many subjects. I do reporting now on super volunteers, and I am also chasing down Black history stories that have never been covered by local TV. And the people who in the 60s were active are reaching ages where they're passing away, and I am trying very hard to get their stories committed so that future generations will always know. Now, my favorite thing in anchoring is elections. Because in elections, if you...
Donna, can I quickly come in here? You are fascinated with elections. Is that to say that you have a political streak running through you?
Yeah. Now, I can't be a politician. Dr. Yomi, you can pick a candidate, but I cannot. So what I do is I study not just the ones you see on CNN and CBS and all of that. I study Louisiana candidates, and so I try and know little facts about a candidate in a local parish, you know, and why her name is Snooky, why her nickname is Snooky, and things like that. And the way you do that is just spend months preparing. You find the local information a lot now. It's easier, can I tell you? Because everyone has a Facebook page.
Oh,
and everyone advertises who they are on their Facebook page because
right.
they're running for office. It's free,
so
you know.
And you don't even have to step out of your office or your home. You could do as much research as you wanted on the internet, couldn't you?
Yeah, it sounds lazy, but you'd be surprised the people that don't look up and find out candidates that are running for office. But this was developed years ago when it took hours for election results to come in. And I and my partner at the time was George Sells, a seasoned broadcaster who had worked in major markets and was in our market toward the end. But we would find out minutia that was interesting. And we could fill the time until those results started coming in. Well, even now, I compile those notes because when they put the print on the air that shows the percentage of votes in favor of a candidate, they only put the person's last name. You need their first name, too, I feel. You don't just read their last names, but you say their first names. And so I can conjure that because I have studied it. And I'm pretty proud of our election coverage because when it comes time for elections, the ratings show that people turn to us.
That is really fascinating. That's really great.
Well, it's like if you... What are you a big fan of? Are you... they call it football where you are. Are you a big fan of soccer?
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm not a big fan of soccer. As a matter of fact, I'm not a sports enthusiast. I'm more interested in self-development, frankly.
Okay.
Although I teach it and I'm a life coach, but for my own, even within the ambit of my own development, I am mainly fixated on self-development and spiritual issues. That's what
all right. Well, I was trying to come up with something that you have all the command of the minutia. You know, you know all the statistics or all of this and that. That's what election is for me.
Okay, is that so? And
yeah.
you throw yourself into it with so much passion that at the end of the day, your end product can't help but be admired, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know if it's admired, but I do know that people watch us, and that's important, is for me to be the best representative for them in this situation.
Okay, that's interesting. Now, we have a caller calling in from Houston, Texas. Eugene and Donna, let's just give him half a minute so he can say hello to you.
Okay.
Dr. Yami, how are you doing, and Mrs. Britt?
I'm doing splendid, and I can say the same for Donna.
Fantastic. I'd just like to take a moment to thank you once again and Ms. Tammy Collins Marquis and the Voice America Network for always bringing such profound guests who have such contributions to make. And I'd just like to make a statement of appreciation to your distinguished guest in regards to her lifelong love of learning. And I think it plays straight to your point about having a plan B after a plan A, because if you have a lifelong love of learning, as your guest has, your mind becomes like an immense tidal wave. It is a tidal wave of knowledge and wisdom, if you will, that upon impacting anything, it can take the shape and form of whatever it encounters and make an inroad toward advancement. I think your guest epitomizes that if we would be life literate, we would be able to respond to any challenge that we meet when our first aspirations are daunted by circumstance. I think she is a wonderful example of that. And on the opposite side, despite being so plasticity, if you will, of mind, she is anchored, as her title suggests. So at the same time as being very, very eclectic, she is also anchored and very focused, and I think that's a characteristic that we could all imitate to great advantage. And I thank you for bringing her on, and I thank you as for always bringing on individuals who have such great contributions to make to us all. Thank you so much, sir. And
thank you so much, Eugene. That was a brilliant exposition on your part. And on behalf of my distinguished special guest, Donna Britt, I say thank you so much for this wonderful calling.
God bless you. You all have a wonderful day.
Thank you, and God bless you too. Now, Donna, we just before another distinguished caller, Tammy Collins McKee of Houston, Texas, joins us, I'd like you to just say a few words about something that I know may have been significant in your career, and that is that definitely there must be some high points in this career. Now, especially if there was anything that was probably followed by an epiphany that might have guided you all these years, is there something along this line that you can share with us?
Yes. I was assigned, because I was an arts person, to cover, back in the old days, networks had to lobby local stations to watch their primetime lineups. And they would have junkets to a hotel in Los Angeles, and they would stack it with the stars of their new CBS shows for you to interview. And the idea was that if you brought in Donna from Baton Rouge or so-and-so from Keokuk, they would sit with a star, interview them, and then run perhaps 3 minutes of that star on a morning show or something like that. It was free advertising for the affiliates, and CBS paid for your trip. So I was invited, and I had done a few of these because I was good at feature writing. And so I came, and I was at the hotel this one particular time, and Carol Burnett, who had had a wildly popular variety show in the 60s and 70s, had basically not been on the air for a while, and CBS had invited her to do a reunion show. Now, her her cast was Tim Conway, who was a deadpan kind of comedian, Vicki Lawrence, her relative, Harvey Keitel. No, that's not the name, is it? Well, anyway, she was going to be open for interviews, and this was a star of mega quality in the 80s. And so I was excited about interviewing her. She was in a penthouse room at the hotel, and they had us line up five deep outside the door so that we could move in quickly. And what you would do is you would walk in, hand them your videotape. They would plug it in their machine. Their camera would shoot the interview. And you would put on their microphone and do the interview, and then when you finished, they'd give you your tape, and you'd walk out the door. So I was ready, and I was excited. Carol Burnett was someone I really admired. And so the first person went in. I'm about fifth person back, and we're all quietly talking in the hall because we're excited. And the first person was told, well, you have 3 minutes, 30 seconds to talk to her. And so the first person went in, and when he came out, the CBS woman at the door fussed at him and said, you were supposed to do just 3:30. You have now shaved the time the other people can use. Go. And so the second person, she said, well, you can only have 2:30. And so the second person comes out, and again, they've run over their time, and they're carving away stuff. They get to me, and I probably have less than a minute, all right? So I run in. I'm slamming on the microphone. I'm sitting down. Carol Burnett is sitting in a chair. Her knees are like 6 inches from mine. And she says, what's your name, dear? And I said, I don't have time. If I tell you my name, I blow the whole amount of time I have for an interview. And she grabbed me by the shoulders and sort of gently shook me. Look at me, she said. It matters to me what your name is. And I said, my name's Donna. And she said, thank you. And then she gave me an interview that was as if I was the only interview she would have that day, when literally she would have 100 that day.
Brilliant.
And I could see why she was running over her time, Yomi, because she was giving fresh answers to every question, even if it was the same question. She was not giving it by rote. She was giving meaningful conversation.
She was beautifully spontaneous, if I'm to put it that way.
She really was. And so I get out of there, and I'm practically walking on clouds, and I realize why everyone was running over their time, was that that's just the nature of the person she was.
The person she was.
All right, so
I go back to my
hotel room, and I call my husband. Oh, my God, I talked to Carol Burnett, and it was incredible, and I told him all about it, you know. And
that's right.
And then as I am in the weeks preparing reports and all of that, I'm thinking about that wonderful, glowy feeling I had when she said, it's important to me. And I thought about it, and I tried to figure out why did I get this, this incredibly warm feeling of connection.
That's right.
And I said, it's because I thought so much of her.
Okay. Donna, we'll just have to take a small break here. Because we have 3 minutes to break. And when we come back, we'd like you to just continue on this thread of Carol Bonnet. But before then, we'll just take a message from a very good friend of ours, the distinguished, remarkable lady from Houston, Texas, Tammy Collins McKee. Can you come in, Tammy?
Yes.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, Tammy.
Hi. Hello, everyone.
My name is
Tammy Collins. Are we on break?
No.
Okay. Hello, everyone. My name is Tammy Collins Marquis, and I'm the business manager to Dr. Yami Garnett. I would like to thank Dr. Garnett. You are such a great talk show host. Also, special thanks to Mrs. Donna Britt, Prophetess Latrice Leak, Brandy Jackson, executive producer, Voice America Network, and our beloved global listeners. To Mrs. Donna Britt, we are supremely thrilled that you are on today's show. Your name is your legacy, your journey, and your sacrifice. You have such an impressive career, and you are one of the most popular television news personalities in the broadcasting industry. Having been on the air for decades, truly you are the definition of an energetic and dynamic anchorwoman. Your ongoing personality, your applied vast experience and knowledge, your integrity, and your work ethics have all combined to give you your rich and enviable pedigree as a media personality of note. Mrs. Britt, today we celebrate your significant contribution to your community and the people of Louisiana. You're an amazing woman who has offered pearls of inspiration to many who have encountered you. And today our show honors your brilliant legacy. Thank you for taking our time to be with us.
Thank you so much, Tammy.
Thank you.
This is so touching. Oh, dear, this is so beautiful. Thank you so much. Now, I thank you on behalf of Donna Britt. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Now, we'll take a short commercial break, and immediately we come, Prophetess Latrice Leak will call in for about 5 minutes to say a wonderful hello and a happy new year to Donna Britt. Thank you.
Success starts here. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. It's your world.
If this show has availed you of tremendous insight into how to live at your highest potential, you can get even more of Dr. Garnett's messages from our website, www.theglobalinstituteinc.com, where his blog, in particular, can be a catalyst for great change in your life. The Global Institute has great material for you to make the changes you need. The book, 365 Days of Wisdom, a daily companion for the soul in search of enlightenment, is available on Amazon.com. It's a 3-in-1 self-help package. Dr. Garnett's latest book is also available. It's titled The Bishop's Testament, and it's available at StonebridgePublications.com. You can also become a member of the Global Institute for Human Excellence by simply visiting our Facebook community page and liking it at www.facebook.com/The Global Institute Inc. This will allow you access to our free resource just for today and some other products lined up for the future. You will also be issued a membership certificate. Get started on your transformation today.
Think of anybody who does not want a better life and to be a better person? Think about that for a second. Almost everyone wants to be better, but how does one go about doing that? One thing that is making people better every week is tuning in to the Self-Improvement Show with Dr. Irene Conlon. All real change comes from within, but many of us don't know where to find the information or guidance we need to make the changes that bring about the improvement. Most of us don't know how to work within. Listen Thursdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Empowerment.
Find out what makes the most successful people tick.
Keep listening to the Voice America Empowerment Channel. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
You are listening to Dream the Life, Live the Dream with Dr. Yomi Garnett. To reach our show today, please call 1-888-346-9141. That's toll-free in North America at 1-888-346-9141. If you prefer to send an email to Dr. Garnett, you may send it to yomigarnett@gmail.com. That's yomigarnett@gmail.com. Now, back to Dream the Life, Live the Dream.
Welcome to the last segment of today's episode of Dream the Life, Live the Dream. Don't forget, we've had with us a remarkable lady from Baton Rouge, Donna Braid, co-anchor of the 6 p.m. and 10 p.m. news on WAFB, the CBS affiliate in Baton Rouge. Welcome, Donna, and we'll have a call-in right now from a remarkable woman of God. Her name is Prophetess Latrice Leake. Wonderful lady. She's going to do a call-in to us right now and tell us a little bit about herself. Latrice, please come in.
Good morning, Dr. Garnett. How are you?
Good morning, my dear Prophetess Latrice Leake. How are you doing? Are you having a gloriously new and prosperous new year?
I am awesome in the Lord. God bless you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Now, Donna, please introduce yourself to our distinguished special guest, Donna Braid.
Yes, I am Prophetess Latrice Leake, and I am one who the Lord has given the awesome charge to manifest the kingdom of God in every area of the believer's lives, whether it is business, your ministry, your church. You want to connect with my ministry because I empower and I do the charge and the Holy Spirit as the Holy Spirit leads. So I'm really excited about our book, well, my book that I'm sharing with you today. And I thank you so much for the opportunity, Dr. Garnett. God bless you.
Now, can you tell us just a little bit about this book and where is it available?
Sure. My book is Prophetic Waters for the Thirsty Soul, and it is available on Amazon.com. You can go to LatriceLeake.com. That's LatriceLeake. LatriceLeake.com or Barnes & Noble, any of those larger bookstores, it's available. And it's a prophetic journey of 30 days into the intimacy of God. And it's a book that will help you to dive deeper into connecting with God. A lot of people want to, they want to operate a ministry. They want to know the gifts of the Spirit. But we have to come in contact and encounter the character and the person of the Lord Jesus Christ. And that's what that book was written to do.
Absolutely brilliant. And I must commend you for this very, very worthy literary effort. Now, you are part of an important event coming up this month in January 2015. Please tell us about it.
Yes, sir. Yes, the event that I am hosting this month in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, is called the Mount Carmel Experience. It is at the Navy Yard Marriott Courtyard Hotel, and it's January the 22nd through the 24th of 2015, and we're going to have an awesome time in the Lord. It is a prophetic training summit. We will teach you not how to be a prophet, but we will teach you how to flow in the gift of prophecy, because I believe that everyone can prophesy. The Bible says that my sheep know my voice. And so if we know the voice of God, we can project the voice of God. We can speak the voice of God in the earth. And that's really what he desires to do. He desires to bring honor and integrity back to the prophetic office, because there has been such a mishandling of prophetic gifts. We've had people manipulating people with prophecy, and we want to set the order right as the Lord has given us the charge to.
Thank you very much, Prophetess Latrice Leake. It's been wonderful having you for this very brief call-in. We wish you the very best in all your endeavors. And I know we are all invited to this important event coming up. Thank you so much, and God bless you.
Thank you, Dr. Yomi. God bless you.
Thank you very much. Donna, welcome back to the last segment of today's episode. And I'd just like you to take off from where you stopped about your epiphany experience during your encounter with Carol Burnett and the spillover into the rest of your life.
Well, I
remember that she had said, you know, as I was blowing her off saying, I don't even have time to say my name because I'll burn up the available time, that she had stopped me and shaken me out of the stressful and said, no, your name really does matter to me. Tell me your name. And then, you know, just gave me the most warm and wonderful interview that you could ever think of. And in the weeks that followed, I realized that the reason I got that warm, glowy feeling and had an encounter with someone that I would never forget is because I thought so much about her. I admired her. And that admiration gave her the power to acknowledge me and create that link. And I thought, if ever someone were to also think kindly of me, that I would never miss that opportunity, that I decided I should never have a bad day when it comes to a viewer. And that's the way I have lived my life ever since then. That's been probably 25 years ago.
Absolutely brilliant. Fantastic. And again, the one thing I always say is, a life is not fully spent at its full potential until we have these kind of beautiful experiences, because it's what you might call your aha experience. Am I coming clear, Donna?
Yes, I like the aha concept. That's good.
Yes, the aha, I have discovered it. Now, this is the true path of my life. Now, this is a remarkable change has taken place in my psychic abilities, in the way I look at issues. So it all boils down to an aha experience, and I must congratulate you for being the beneficiary of such a wonderful, sublime experience. Now, Donna, you are a breast cancer survivor, and this has seen you involved in fundraising events and other activities associated with cancer. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Well, I think that people who are undergoing cancer treatment feel that they are apart from their normal lives. And a lot of times, they acknowledge another person who has had cancer as someone who knows better than anyone else could. And so I am able to attach my name to fundraising projects for cancer services all over South Louisiana. And come and speak at the beginning of Relays for Life, you know, and be the cheerleader that makes it all very pleasant. I think that when you're struggling with cancer, families feel helpless. And in raising money to find money for research and also for helping services for cancer patients, you know, local services that can be used to transport them to doctors and give them the things they need, they, in a way, are able to do something. And it's rewarding for them. And it's very rewarding for me to see an event grow. Some of these cancer events, I've been there since the very first year. And so when I go every year, I see how much it grows every year. I think that we can kill cancer. I don't know how rapidly it happens because I don't know the state of research. But to me, I think we ought to kill cancer in 10 more years.
That sounds very fascinating. Now, on what intellectual basis do you base this supposition?
No, this is just hoping. This is just hoping. I just know that in news, we see a steady stream of research results and new innovations, that medicine moves so quickly now because of the way that we can be surgically incisive about what we will study this time in order to build on the previous study. And that with things developing as rapidly as they are, I may live to see the day when there is no more cancer.
I agree with you. I share that sentiment. Again, in my opinion, in my carefully considered opinion, especially from my background as a medical doctor myself, a physician, that the evolutionary threats in medical science give us sufficient hope to believe that sometime in the near future, we might just have a definitive cure for cancer, at least most forms of cancer. And to the extent that most forms of cancer have the same uniform trends in terms of etiology, going through them, I don't see any reason why so many birds can be killed with one stone, if we were to use a figurative manner of speaking, where cancer and cancer cells are concerned. So I'd like to share your enthusiastic hope today about mankind finally defeating this scourge called cancer. Again, there are so many interesting facets to your life. I'm aware, for instance, that your wonderful husband and yourself had a very wonderful Christmas and New Year season. I'm aware that you were on vacation in Europe. You spent quite some time touring Sweden and Germany. And I am also aware that you visited the Nazi concentration camps of Dachau. Now, for me, this is very significant because in my grown-up years, I did quite a bit of personal study about the Holocaust. Now, what impressions did you develop or that become prominent in your mind and your psyche while you were at Dachau?
Well, one thing I could point out is that my family, my husband and I have two kids, and we take them everywhere with us. And my children knew what had happened at Dachau. And you have different kinds of sites for the Holocaust. When you visit like a Holocaust museum, it's an emotional situation because it's the way the story is told in a more sad and grieving and memorial way. At Dachau, the place is pristine in the way they keep the grounds. There was beautiful winter rye, very vivid green grass growing, and you could see the footprints of where the bunkers had been. They have two major bunkers on the sides that were preserved, and they have a bunker in the back where they tortured people that is also still there. But across the back of the site, you have shrines constructed by all the religions represented in the prisoners that were in the camp. And they're beautiful memorials to the people. And the day we're there, it's very, very cold, and we're bundled up, and the sky is vivid blue. And my kids are quiet, and we're walking, and we're looking in the bunker where they all slept stacked like sardines on top of each other. These bunks are very, very close together. They don't have mattresses. They were just thrown in there like animals in cages. And the facts that you read about in the displays tells you how they have 6 to 8 times the capacity of the bunker packed with people, that they just did not give them humane conditions at all, ever. And it's like the facts are laid out there. There's a picture that I think is really unfortunate. It's an American soldier who's smiling as he and another guy look over what is a pile of gold fillings that have been pulled from the mouths of dead Jews and placed on the table. And I think what happened was the photographer made the guy nervous. And when he's setting up the camera, which is not a quick thing to do in those days, this soldier, maybe he was joking with a friend trying to cut the tension. And so he was recorded. It looks like he's almost happy to see the gold, laughing at the gold, but I empathize with him, and I think that's not what was going on. But they had pictures of very specific things that my children saw, and yet there was not open weeping in this place. They took you into a room where they said people were told here they were going to take a shower, and through these vents came the poisonous gas. And so you're standing in the room, and you can feel on your chest the horror of that moment. But it's not like they are doing it in a melodramatic way. It's just very matter of fact. You walk the halls, and there's a hallway in the back bunker, like I said, where they took their most important prisoners to torture them for information. And there are rooms that are made that are about a yard or smaller in both width and depth, and so a person could not sit down in the room. They had to stand up the whole time, and they would shove a prisoner in there and let them stay for a few days to try and torture them and make them more malleable to questioning. But the thing that just struck both Mark Ballard and me, my husband, is that it was so systematic, that they had made it like a factory. When one incinerator wasn't enough to burn the bodies, they built another incinerator, and both incinerators are still there at Dachau. And it just seems like they were eradicating roaches in their minds, that they somehow turned human beings into something less than a human being in the way they rationalized what they were doing.
That's right. Donna? Well, like we know, every beautiful thing has to come to an end. Unfortunately, we don't have any more time. And I thank you so much for this exhilarating experience with you today. Thank you for being our distinguished special guest. Thank you for the poignant memories of Dakar you've brought to us. Thank you for giving us a very rare peep into your brilliant and fascinating career as a news anchor woman. And thank you for presenting your beautiful personality to us today. Thank you so much, Donna Britt.
Oh, I love talking about Plan B.
Thank you so much. God bless you. On behalf of my executive producer, Brandy Jackson of Phoenix, Arizona, and my business manager, Temi Collins McKee, I thank you very much for today's show, and I look forward to seeing you again next week. Thank you. Bye. Goodbye.
Thank you again for tuning us in this week. Please join Dr. Yomi Garnett next Thursday for another edition of Dream the Life, Live the Dream. Thursdays at 7 a.m. U.S. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Find enlightenment this week, and we'll talk again in the next one.